Hello and welcome. I'm Amanda Nottage, editor of Creative Head, a magazine for hairdressers and salon owners, and you're listening to The Root of It, a podcast series in partnership with Europe's largest hair and beauty booking platform, Treatwell. On this raucous episode, we hear from two kings of men's hair, Jodie Taylor and Charlie Cullen. Now, this pair met years ago while both working for super salon group Tony and Guy, and they shared a mutual passion for education and men's hair. Charlie regularly leads hair teams backstage at London Fashion Week Men's, and Jodie can be found on set creating hair for major men's fashion labels, including Paul Smith, Topman and Louis Vuitton. Ladies and gents, fasten your seatbelts. This is a hoot of an episode. You're in for a treat.
So, Charlie, do you remember when we met?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you?
We've got the same recollection? Or?
Well, I mean, for me, I remember exactly. I think it was September. It was a little bit drizzly outside.
Yep.
It was in MVQ. Mm-hmm. You had your first day in the academy. You were wearing like a shirt, like a black shirt, skinny jeans, I think. Like you had these like funny loafers on. I think they were like fake Gucci loafers.
Yeah.
You had a dodgy little haircut.
What, had you done it as a demo?
You were 17, I was 25. No, I remember you like the first day because I was teaching and I was new to, I think I just started teaching and, you know, we had these classes of like... 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds coming in, and you were in the class, and I don't know, I just kind of, like, you stood out, because I was like, oh, he's like another boy, he likes football, and I remember you done a transit length, though, and I was like, I think you'd done it better than what I could.
Oh, really?
I remember checking it, thinking, well, he's all right, this kid. But, yeah, it stood out for me, and then you take notice, because, it's kind of rare that you meet people that you think, oh, actually, even though you were, you know, quite a bit younger than me, you always want people in there that are kind of, like, similar to you, and you kind of hopefully, like, I think I had it when I was young, that you kind of have older people that you kind of, like, become friends with and you look up to and you feel like you're in the same kind of position and you've been in the same position. So I remember it very, very clearly.
Mm.
You've done a great haircut. And then, you know, from that time, it was like seeing you kind of like going through the transition of your training and becoming a stylist and stuff. So I always had my eye on you from the start.
I do remember it, to be fair, because obviously I grew up on the outskirts of London, so yeah. I'd never used to go to the academy to do my training until like my second year, pretty much. So I never was really aware of what the potential was for that job. You know, I worked in a Tony Guy salon in Uxbridge and worked just with a load of women, actually, which wasn't all bad.
So, and your point is?
But obviously, I come into academy and then, again, someone to look up to, a bit like yourself, and I didn't even know then the men's side of things. I just thought, you know, this is someone that is similar to me, and I thought, oh, maybe this is something like that I could do.
Yeah, I know what you mean though, because I when I started, and like we both worked at Tony and Guy, we both trained at Tony and Guy, spent a long time there, and when I started I felt so out of place because it was just something like, you know, coming from sort of school and going into that environment where you're surrounded by women and girls and clients and not knowing anything about hairdressing and just kind of cleaning, you kind of feel a little bit out of your depth. So when you come across people that are, you know, from a similar sort of like kind of working class background in kind of the outskirts of London that you kind of do straight away sort of have a connection with. So it's kind of like, ah, do you know what? Actually, you see these guys and they might be a few years ahead of what you've done and you kind of think, ah, you know, that's kind of where I want to be going and stuff. So it is a strange place doing hairdressing, you know, when you're a young person. Yeah.
I never knew I even wanted to get into it. I just sort of fell into it.
Same,
and it's
same.
Only there that I thought, oh, yeah, well, maybe this, I could see a career in it and different paths and opportunities and so on, really.
Yeah.
And I think probably back then, you know, it's different now because with, like, Instagram or whatever, you can see your idols or a little bit more. But then if you were on the outside of London, you didn't really know what was going on, you know, so you felt a bit alienated. So that, for me, was almost like a bit of a slight door open into that world.
Yeah, definitely. It's hard to know where your career's ever going to go back then, yeah. Isn't it? It's hard to see.
Even like, now.
It's so true, isn't it? But, yeah, I think, you know, like, when you meet people and you kind of have, like, bonds and relationships with them, you know, from the start, it's kind of like you've got the same kind of ideologies, the same sort of taste, the same kind of, you know, I don't know, the same background in a lot of ways that you kind of instantly like have that connection with. And I think, so it's, that was 2005. So we've known each other 15 years.
Long time. Who would have thought you'd be come to my wedding and having a barbecue with my little girl and all that sort of stuff. It's crazy, isn't it? How things sort of materialise from there. But thinking about the first job that we had, Do you remember that?
I don't, you know.
Funny enough, it wasn't so memorable for you as what it was for me. I think I'd only just not long qualified. So we used to have our art team training on a Tuesday evening. And then after every Tuesday, we'd end up going into the pub, which was mainly the reason why everyone went there. And I remember coming out of there afterwards and I had like a Parker jacket on and you were like, oh, that's weird. I'm doing a shoot on Thursday for shortlist magazines, and it's all about parkas and mods and stuff like that. Like, what are you doing on Thursday? Do you want to come? So all of a sudden, I was like newly qualified, thinking, oh, fucking hell, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm working, but I'm going to say, I'll manage to get the day off. And come around. You remember the shoot? There's the three boys, they're on the Vespas.
Yeah, we're down by the river, in Hackney.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, it's so funny because I completely forgot about that. Do you know what I mean? Because I think that's when I'd kind of like, I'd already started shooting and I was kind of almost like decided that my career was wanted to go in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it completely now, but I forgot about it. Do you know what I mean? It was one of them jobs for me. But I think for you, obviously at the time, that's going on your first shoot. It's
my first experience being on set or working on a model, so to speak.
And yeah. How was the day?
Yeah, it was good. I was nervous, man, because obviously I remember I had to cut one of the models. So you were cutting, I think, one of them. It was like a little bit of a fade on one of them. And then the other one, you said, all right, you do this. And I remember then thinking, oh, he's going to check my haircut. Before, you'd always be checking the haircuts in the academy environment and the school environment. So now it was the pressure of, like, I don't know, performing.
Yeah, it's funny because I probably got you to do it because I thought you'd do a better job than me. So I was probably like, yeah, that's the dodgy hair. Like, you cut that one, stitch him up. Do you know what I mean? Stop me from having to do it.
But I learned a lot then, really. And I mean, I think from before that, even in my training, I knew that I wanted to go into the men's side of things because I'd always cut my friend's hair before I'd even got shown how to do a textural crop and scissor over comb.
Yeah.
I'd end up cutting my mate's hair to get some money to go out on the weekend because I was earning $260 a month at the time.
So he was on that as well. I was on that.
Yeah, $260 a month.
No, mine was $240.
Really?
£60 a week. Is that $240?
Got a £20 bonus. That's all a bit of potential me.
No, because you were coming from zone 6, I was zone 4, innit? So you needed a bit of extra travel money. Oh, that's funny, though. That is funny.
Then after that, I thought, do you know what? This is a bit of me going into that sort of side of things. So.
Yeah, I think, like, the shooting side of it is nice when you can kind of have people come along and see kind of what you do. Do you know what I mean? Mm. In that sense. And I think for me, it was new then as well. Do you know, like at that time, but I knew I wanted to go in that direction. And I suppose the same as you, there was a point in time when I realized that maybe I should just be doing men's hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it was. It was always like a comfort thing of like cutting your friend's hair at home. Mm-hmm. Like I had a little, when my brother moved out, we had a spare bedroom. So my dad put a mirror in there and like I bought this cheap hairdressing chair and we put a shelf up and like I had like a salon. So I used to charge like 10 or 15 pound a haircut or five when I was an assistant.
Yeah.
So you used to do like, I don't know, 10 haircuts and get, work it out, £50 all day. And and I suppose that was the start of men's hair for me, and it was a time before it was cool as well. I think, really,
well, I think you, as far as within the company at the time, I think you opened up that door, you created that sort of buzz about being a men's hairdresser. you know what I mean? I think that was, before then, it wasn't really happening. So I think, like, if you're looking back to anyone that specialises in that side of things with the background you have and in education, like, realistically, you were like, one of the first people, in my eyes at least, to
create that, like, scene. Yeah, I looking back at it, it kind of, that is kind of really what happened, wasn't it? Mm. Because it was, like, left and there was nothing really done with it. Like, it was just a little, we have a man on a shoot because we have to, but there was no kind of focus or no one giving direction on it or no, like, you know, complete collection into men. So it was always just like a little, a prop almost for the girl models. So for me, it's not like I saw an opening, but it was almost like, it's what I want to do, really. Mm-hmm. And I think I can give a something to it and, like, almost create something from this, because it was like being left to its own devices. So I kind of, like, was like, I started running the men's course because I'd sort of started doing shoots on my own, and it was like a time. And then, you know, there was people like yourself and Kevin and Dexter, you know, that were coming through that were, you know, showing a real interest into men's hair. And it was like, this is almost like getting really, really big. And there was a time that the whole thing was a lot bigger than what the women's were. There was much more interest in the men's course. Yeah. And we didn't have enough time to do all of the requests. So we were like doing 25 models on a 3-day course, 25 students twice a month with a waiting list. Whereas when I started it, there was 12 students a year. So it's a massive, massive change. And I'm not saying it's because of me, but there was just a real interest in men's hair. And at that same time, it was when barbering sort of really had a sort of a comeback in a way, that it was actually like, do you know what? Like, this, you can't do these haircuts just with scissors, or you can, but it's not the same. And so the timing was kind of just perfect, really.
Yeah.
And men's hair was becoming like its own massive, massive thing. And now, obviously, it kind of, with barbering and like hairdressing kind of techniques almost coming together, like the younger generation want to learn both, or the people that they work for are teaching them both. So both the kind of industries have sort of joint in a way.
It's just standard now, isn't it? You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah. Like, and I think for me and you, we were like men's hairdressers, first of all. It was never clippers. It was always just scissors and a comb, like, you know, blending hair in that way. And it was a great way to learn, but almost had to come back a little bit and be actually like, right, we need to learn how to fade properly. We need to learn how to work with afro hair and stuff like that. So for me, it was amazing. Like, it was an amazing time, and it's still continuing now, I think.
That's
like
what I was going to say. I think that's the beauty of it, is I don't feel ever too big not to learn something new, or to specialise and to sort of branch out and improve as a hairdresser, as a barber, you know, just as a hair cutter in general. So
do you, like, I know you give education, like, have you like, is that kind of like your main focus at the moment, is doing courses and stuff like that, or like where?
I suppose so. I mean, obviously I work in a shop together in Soho a couple of days a week, just looking after clients. And I actually really enjoy that side of things, and it's something that I probably didn't do so much of, was working in the shop. I don't know, maybe for the last sort of 5 years previous, because I used to teach the majority of the time, and I used to then just be put in a salon one day a week, usually on a Saturday. And I sort of never felt part of the salon, because I was just rocking up, doing a couple of clients. Whereas now, like, I've got a good environment in the shop and doing a couple of days, and I've got my clients, I'm enjoying being busy, I'm enjoying, I suppose, just having a bit of a varied week, really, that I've got a little bit of everything. So I'd say the education then is the main side of things of what I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah.
Which you know, I love. And being off for so long with the whole lockdown thing, sometimes you sort of, I don't know, reevaluate everything. And then straight away, the first day I came back and done a course, I thought, oh, such a good feeling.
Yeah.
Such a buzz. But and then obviously I'd love to get a little bit more into your side of things, which I guess is obviously more on the session side of things. That's something that I can definitely see more of a future with that. I mean, How's that going for you? Is that obviously the main thing that's
yeah,
your weakness
it's kind of like where I've put my focus on now. Mm. You know, it is like the session stuff. I love it, and you know, every day, you know, when I do work and I go to work, it's almost like I have to kind of pinch myself and, you know, like kind of understand and realize how fortunate I am to be able to do the sort of work and have the opportunities that I get.
Mm.
But then I also kind of, it has been like a long-term goal from really the beginning, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been working towards this point and I'm still working towards improving and doing more and doing bigger jobs and, you know, and stuff. But I'm also improving myself in that sense. But yeah, the session is where I'm at. I still do education.
Mm.
Obviously, you know, for me, when I do that now, it's like, I've kind of found my niche in terms of who I am as a barber and a stylist,
yeah.
Which is, you know, the focus is a lot on editorial hair, you know, and so when I do my courses now, it's kind of to a smaller scale and to, you know, designed for people that want to get into that side of things,
yeah.
Or have an interest in it, which, you know, not everyone does. I think when you're learning so much kind of technique focused as opposed to looking into more of the trend side of things, you know.
Yeah.
So for me, I keep the courses small, but I mean, last year when we done one together,
yeah,
that was, you know, that was one of my best days last year because, mm. You know, when we get having a chance to work alongside each other again, you know, like in that sort of sense. And, you know, I feel like we have the same level of tastes in our work as well. So, you know, that for me, if, you know, I want, like, we was, you know, the plan was this year to continue that and to sort of take
travel
it around the country and
yeah.
Maybe take it into Europe and, you know, America. But obviously that's kind of come to a bit of a standstill now, mm. Isn't it? So I think, you know, maybe doing like some webinars and things like that would be a good way
yeah.
for me and you to go.
I mean, when you can go to work and it not feel like work and it's just a laugh, enjoyable, like I don't need to get paid to do that. That's something that I crave to do. And
yeah.
when you can be in a find your place in this sort of job and career and you can do something that you love day in, day out and actually have a crack and not want to go home.
Yeah.
Like I feel like quite privileged really to have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it's taken me 16 years to get
understand
to that point.
What it is,
yeah,
though. I think that's so important, though, because I realised that. And I was like, I love always like my job, but there was a lot of things I was doing that I didn't agree with or it didn't interest me. So it was like, how can I put myself in a position where work is what I want to do? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if you're a sports person, you go and play a football match or whatever, like you are in your element, do you know what I mean? And that is what you want to do. And I think, you know, like for us, being able to like work up until this point, like, or a, you know, a goal that actually this is where I want to be, do you know what I mean? And then it kind of like, I feel like you give so much more as well, don't you? And it's so much beneficial, like, for everyone.
Yeah, big time. If I was going to look at your career, or even just look at career in general and think, you know, won awards, working with the designers and the shoots and magazines that you work with, you know, working on celebrities, which, you know, you're never, ever going to put that out there that you've, I don't know, done David Beckham's hair and worked on the Topshop campaigns that
yeah.
are all in the Oxford Street window. You know, it's major stuff, and I think it might actually be when you look back on it, you think, fucking hell, like I've done all right there, you know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, in my own space, I think I'm very, I'd say, English in a way or stuff of that. Like I don't sometimes big myself up,
yeah.
Like you
sometimes
know,
that's
other
a problem,
people do,
it?
And
yeah.
I think it holds me back, and it kind of, but it also is one of the sort of things that I don't know, like I understand that I've
yeah.
been very lucky and I've done some of the things I've done I can't believe. And to be honest, when I speak to my friends that are not hairdressers, I tell them about it. But
yeah.
when I speak to other hairdressers, I don't really like to say it because I don't really like to feel like I'm sort of showing off and
no.
things like that. And I just don't want to come across as that person that like,
no.
oh, I do this and I do that, because yeah, I do it and I love it, and it does make me like, you know, like flipping get goosebumps when I think about the things that I get to do and I'm doing and stuff. And you know, it makes me very like, I get quite like emotional because I can't believe it.
Yeah.
But then I also like, I don't really like talking about it to the industry too much because I just don't want to sound like a knob.
No, that, you know what I mean? Does. Like, but that's what keeps you humble and grounded, and that's why I think, in my opinion, people like you and relate to you so much.
Yeah, No, I appreciate. I work in the salon sort of, you know, like every sort of other week or something, and I only do like the clients that I've been doing for like about 100 years, you know, so my clientele sort of I do, and then if I do, then I'm working on kind of models there. But you work in the salon and you've been obviously taking on new clients and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, do you feel like the client today is the same, like the male client is the same as it has been, or do you feel like they've kind of, like, they've evolved in a way, or they're kind of seeking you out? Because I feel that, like, what I notice is that, for me, I see your, you know, like, because of Instagram, like, if I get a request for a haircut, and I'm sure you do, people have found you.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? They've found your work. And I see you getting lots of guys coming in with long hair.
Yeah, I think that's a sort of privilege at the moment that, you know, and it's taken a while, but eventually what you sort of put out there through your sort of social channels, you attract that clientele, do you know what I mean? So, actually, just coming back from the whole sort of lockdown COVID situation, over the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks, I've actually done so many more new clients than my regulars, because they've obviously had this time during lockdown, their hair's grown a bit longer, and they've gone through Instagram or whatever and done their homework on maybe who they'd want to cut their hair, and haven't paid for a haircut in 6 months or whatever. So, okay, I'm going to go in to see Charlie or to see Jodie or whatever. So I think people will do their research a little bit more and actually spend the time to actually pick that person. And it's much more accessible, whereas before, what would you do? You'll obviously have some clients that will go to anywhere or what's convenient, and you get a mixture of that there. But I think where we're based in Soho, I think we get quite a targeted audience.
Yeah.
You know, they come to
it's
us.
It's a destination shop, really.
And I love it. Like I said, I'm loving being in a shop at the moment.
Do you think that a lot of them are kind of, like, the older and the younger generation differ in terms of, like, where they kind of find their barber from?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, because then I suppose the older generation might just be a bit on a Google type of thing and just put in best barbers in London or something like that. And then they come in and they trust your advice and go off what you're thinking. I'd say the younger sort of group will be the opposite, search for you specifically and then come to you with an idea.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily like looking into the world of fashion. I think that's like our job to get the references. I feel what you're saying with that. And then you pull up a picture and then you can sort of show them. And I'm thinking maybe something along this type of vibe.
Yeah, I've got clients that are like, have had like hair transplants when they've not even got losing their hair, because they want their hairline to be as straight as it can be, but they've got like the perfect hairline, and they have colour, and they do perms, and they do, you know, they kind of do like a bit of everything. Then I've got some clients that are like completely against it. Like, my clientele is very, very, very varied.
Yeah, like, that's what makes the day so interesting, isn't it? Really, it's hard to pinpoint one, generalize a client as one person, because it doesn't exist like that, does it, really?
Do you think like there's color is like a big trend for guys, or like people are looking, do you recommend it to your clients?
I suppose a little bit in my personal taste, and this is probably quite contradictive, because if you look at the last shoot I'd done, I had a model with bright yellow hair and bits of blue, but in my opinion, I just prefer something natural, or just like a clean bleach blonde, you know what I mean? Just that, or a little bit of root. I don't like anything too done. Obviously, if you're doing a photo shoot and you're trying to push the boundaries a little bit more, then it's different, isn't it? It's not for the client, it's for like an image purpose.
It's always like what's relevant, isn't it? But I mean, obviously you're getting on a bit in your years now, like
me.
Like, how do you feel about when guys are going grey and colouring grey because...
Are you looking for advice or do you want to take that hat off?
Right. I tell you now, my grey hairs are my favourite, do you know what I mean?
Because hey,
they're cultured, they've been around, like they're evolving into like a more of a distinguished type of guy, do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So for me, my grey, I love my grey and I would never ever colour it and I would never...
But would you advise a client then as well?
No, never. No. I think, like, I don't know, and this sounds really sexist, but I think men with grey hair, it looks really cool.
Yeah.
Like,
I like it. I'd love to go grey. Not quite grey like you, but...
No, but I mean...
A little bit of a flash and a fringe, maybe. Listen,
if I can keep my hair and go grey, I'd be, like, happy forever. You know what I mean? And the grey, why I like the greys, they're a little bit thicker in density and texture.
Give you a bit of volume.
They give me a little bit more lift. So the grey, no, I don't. I would never recommend my clients. I think grey hair is great, isn't it? It's like, you know,
it's character.
It's
and
character.
Do you know what? For me, in men's hair, like that is what makes men's hair so interesting. And if there's a certain style, certain look, it's all about the whole image, the way they dress, and the character and personality. You have to have that. To wear a certain haircut or to look a certain way, it's all about that. For me, that goes hand in hand with the haircut.
And that is what I, you know, brings back with, like, I think for me, like, a successful barber or stylist is someone that recognises someone else's taste and, you know, gives them the best kind of haircut that would suit them as an individual, as opposed to... Like, yeah, we all have our own style and the way we like to cut hair, but it's also, it's not about, like, what we can do. It's actually making someone a better version of themselves.
Yeah.
And I think when, you know, like, people become too one-dimensional in the way that they do things, you kind of can miss out on, you know, because I get just as much enjoyment doing, like, a really basic, simple haircut that, you know, would be like photo worthy of a picture on Instagram than I do of doing something that's really fancy that, you know, is kind of quite intriguing and interesting just because it's almost like the challenge is exactly the same. Do you know what I mean? It's about doing like something that is completely suits that person. And that is why understanding people's taste, understanding eras, understanding fashion and stuff as a stylist is not just about how you can cut hair. It's about, you know, knowing your knowledge and history and all of that, of what goes along with it, that what's going to be relevant to someone.
And that's part of a price of a haircut now, isn't it? Like, you have to take that into consideration.
That
you do pay for that knowledge. And that's the biggest thing that clients... have, like, our biggest, like, responsibility, I suppose, is in instilling trust in them. Obviously, like, your clientele could be a little bit different because also you're working on clients for shoots as well, isn't it? So if you were going to rock up and do something for, like, an actor for a shoot or red carpet, you know, what's the difference with a client for anyone that would work on it in a normal, almost shop?
I mean, for me, it's exactly the same process, is that, like, you are trying to give this person confidence, you know. What I find is interesting for me is that the actors that I work with, like, most of them are probably a lot more low-key than what someone in the shop would want. Do you know what I mean? In the shop, when you're doing a haircut, you're searching for perfection for that technique and for that person. What I find with my actors is almost like they want to be a little bit anti- that, do you know what I mean? So they don't want to be like superly groomed
and
like,
understated.
They don't want to be like perfectly hairsprayed and fake tan and all that. They want to just be like super low key, but in some respect that is the whole charm in itself, isn't it? And that is almost is like as difficult or more difficult to kind of do than actually doing something perfect, really. You know, because it's like, how can you make someone look cool by not making them look cool and not having any effort? And a lot of effort goes into no effort.
Sometimes it's the hardest thing to do, isn't it?
But I mean, I love that side of things, but you know, I also love doing perfect haircuts in the shop as well, you know, and kind of looking at that side of it.
I think, like anyone, you just want to have, and that's the great thing, I think, maybe about both of us with our jobs, is having that little bit of a sort of the diversity, really, is having a bit of variation in your week. So one day you'll be doing a shoot, the next you might be teaching, the next you're just working, you're in a shop. So that's what keeps me interested, really.
Where do you look now? Like, how do you find that you search for your inspiration now? Like, what inspires you, like, in the creative world?
It's hard to... I think it's very hard to search for inspiration. Do you know what I mean? I don't think you should search for it. I think you should just find it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you just come across it. So it might be something simple that you, I don't know, you watch. Like, recently I was on Netflix, I was watching a documentary on the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
And you should watch, it's quite cool, yeah, actually. They have a bit of an insight. You know, they're not necessarily the hair icons, but it gave you a bit of a scene into that and the way they would shoot their own music videos, yeah, and take, yeah, their own pictures. Like, really, really cool documentary. So I come across little things like that. It might be a style of someone shot something, or it might be then looking into a certain era, and you do a little bit of homework. For me, music is the easiest thing because, again, about characters, you look at the front man of a band or a certain, yeah, music in a certain era, or maybe how they then changed their whole appearance from one album to the next. So it's a very difficult one to answer.
I think it's just being like having a hunger for knowledge and having an interest in the kind of artistic world, whether it be film, whether it be music, yeah, whether it actually be art, photography, whatever it is. I used to, when I first started sort of getting into teaching and wanting to do shoots, on my day off I'd go into London and like go to the shops where they'd have all the magazines, and I'd spend like a fortune and buy, yeah, all these magazines, and you know, go and buy like old films that people had recommended me, like old DVDs and stuff like that, and kind of and watch them like hoping that like it was going to change my life, when actually, yeah, if you just kind of enjoy the process of being like aware of things, you're always finding inspiration. Like my inspiration, like obviously now having our phones in front of us all the time, you're constantly bombarded with stuff, whether it be good or bad, whatever it is, you've just got too much knowledge coming through it. So it kind of takes a little bit of the beauty away from, yeah, it in some respects, because it's too readily available and you're overindulged in it.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, I look at session hairdressers, like I look to see, yeah, what they're doing, but I also look at like young barbers as well and young hairdressers, and I see what they're doing, and kind of, you know, the two for me as a combination, like the mixture of two worlds that are so similar but so far, yeah, apart. I think having that kind of thing of like, what does a young boy in Lincoln, how does he want to have his hair cut, or Derby, or wherever he could, yeah, be in the world, how is this 16-year-old cutting or having his hair cut? And then what is going on on the catwalk at the same time? Do you know, yeah, what I mean? So there's almost like my eyes kind of everywhere in the industry, because I don't want to never not be able to do something and like ever sort of turn my back on any level of where people are in the industry. And I think that for me is what I kind of like exciting. And it's obviously very obvious because, you know, it's there for everyone to see it, but it's how you kind of digest it yourself and how you take in the knowledge and stuff. I know I kind of get a sense of like what your vibe is with kind of your work and stuff like that, but have you got like if you could go back in time, if you had a time machine, Back to the Future, my favorite film, if you had a time machine, the DeLorean, where would you go? Like, what era would you be the one that you could get back to?
So difficult, because actually, I mean, you'd love just to pop in for each decade and just get a little bit of everything, wouldn't you, really? But, I mean, you've seen so much of 90s stuff at the moment, isn't it, really, that, you know, obviously, you don't necessarily want to go back to 90s, because I was alive then. You want to go back to the time that you're not.
You see me with my curtains moping about.
But, I don't know, maybe, like, little sort of, like, late 70s, 80s, I feel like, music-wise, it was quite a cool time. You get a little bit of casuals then, yeah, maybe as well, which is like definitely up your street as well, yeah, isn't it, yeah, really? It's such a difficult one to answer, really. I see a lot of like my long hair recently has been a little bit more 70s and a little, yeah, bit more. But you know what? I almost feel that I want to move away from anything like that now, almost a bit mullety, because
it's a bit obvious.
It's done. I've done it. And it probably sounds stupid me saying it, because if you look at my Instagram, it's always, yeah, that. But now I'm definitely moving away from the mullet side of things and having something a little bit more 60s and a little bit more, you know, like purdy really, but like on a wavy shape. So you're losing that. You still got length in the back, but it's almost like rounded through as opposed to that dramatic
difference.
Two-step. Yeah. I mean, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same. Like, I've kind of been like, at the moment, you're always going to that longer sort of length of shape. Mm. But I also, you know, for me, and I'll tell this to any young person, it's about how you evolve, like, constantly. And we're, you know, like, we get bored so quickly of haircuts. And it's like, all of a sudden, something's kind of there, and it's like what you want to do. And as soon as you've done it for a while, you kind of want to move on to the next thing. And you just want to, like, you want to change, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, for me, I'm kind of still like, where am I going at the moment? Like, what direction? And I'm a bit unsure myself, do you know what I mean?
Time,
I'm kind of
it?
Waiting for it, like, because we've had 4 months of not sort of like cutting hair.
Mm.
And to be honest, in that time, I kind of didn't really look at it too much either. Like, I just sort of had a break.
Yeah.
Which, you know, a lot of other people studied and done this and that, and I just sort of stopped. But I kind of had a break. But there's certain things that I don't want to see again, and I don't want never want to touch again.
What's that?
I mean, for me, and I don't want to offend anyone out there if they've got one, but I would be quite happy never to see a shaved side top knot situation on. Like, you know, do you ever see the video of the in South Africa when the guys were driving around like cutting people's off?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know whether that was real or not. But
you know what?
Was...
You actually see a lot of it now because the people in lockdown, they've
grown their hair.
They've grown their hair, but they've shaved the sides and couldn't really go much further than the curve of the head and thought, oh, do you know, I'll just tie it up.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. If your hair's long, you tie it up. It looks great. But like when it's shaved at the side, that for me is a no.
What about, you know, speaking about mullets already, but I can't remember looking back to when I was younger, whether you had it or not, but I remember, you know, the actual mullet, but getting the straighteners on the back. Remember that? You'd bone the fringe off, you'd have like a little bit of a slight taper on the sides, and then it would go down maybe into a bit of a V.
Yeah, V's but you at had a back. Slight mohawk at the back, is, at the top as
the
well.
The V at
it?
The back for me is, please. I never want to see that again, and then getting a little irons on the back. I like to think we're way past that, but you just don't know, do you?
I had the little straighteners at the back. Yeah. It was a disaster.
I
used to have a blow dry. I used to brush blow dry with a round brush to smooth it out.
Listen.
And then iron it. Bit of hairspray, I think dry waxes. But I tell you, you say that now, I reckon probably next year that would be what we're doing, because the early 2000s, that's
going to
like
move on 90s, to that.
Yeah, the 90s.
It's going to evolve naturally.
Yeah, and then we'll be like, I weren't even like a teenager then, I was a pure adult working, like that was what I was doing as a job.
Listen, I've never told anyone this really, and I didn't even think I was going to say this, but when I was about 18, going into Salon International, it's the first time I'd ever been, might have been 17, right?
I don't know why I can't wait to hear this.
And I went with my salon, and obviously I had this little bit in the back which I would straighten, but it wasn't quite long enough. So on the side, they obviously they're doing different stands. Some people were selling hairsprays. They were doing hair extensions, right? So I got a couple of bonded extensions in, right? But the bird there, she couldn't cut them. So it was down to my bum, right? And I had to go back from Salon International on the train to Uxbridge.
That's
an hour and 20 minutes with hair extensions down to my bum. And I had to get someone in to cut it the next day at work. So I've gone home. My mum and dad are thinking, Jesus, what's happened to our son? He's gone to this hair expo, but he's come back with a little mullet going down to his bum. It weren't blended. I don't even know what colour it was. It's terrible.
Have you seen who falls in all his when he has the little clipping thing?
No.
You see here, Rodney has the clipping ponytail. I'll send it to you. It's genius.
I didn't even know I was going to say that. That's come into my head.
That's probably the best thing I've ever heard, I think. I think that's it, isn't it?
I think that's it. That's a good way to close it.
Oh, my God.
You've been enjoying Listen to What the Man Said, Series 1 of The Root of It. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, head on over to creativeheadmag.com for more podcast goodness.